This is the Developing Teacher Eyes podcast, which is an experiment by the methods class with Dr. Kristen Turner at Drew University. And I am here with two students who are embarking on this adventure with me. We aren't sure where this is going to go, and we're looking for feedback from our audience. But right now, we just want to think about what we're learning and how we are growing as teachers. And I remember somebody telling me when I was younger that teachers have eyes in the back of their heads, which means that teachers have different ways of looking at the classroom than even students do. So how do we develop those eyes in the back of our heads? And how do we understand both our students and the learning environment? These are some of the questions we're going to explore. And I am here with Katrina and Emily. And Katrina, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Katrina. I'm in my fifth year here at Drew as part of the MAT program. I'm currently in a sixth grade classroom, and I'm really excited to see how the year goes. And I can't wait to be a teacher, an English teacher.
And Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily. I once upon a time was a teacher. I used to teach high school English and history, and I took a very long break. And have been raising four children, and I'm interested in Kristen's eyes in the back of the head, because also parents are known for having eyes in the back of their head. I'm beginning my journey back to the classroom, hopefully, by being an education student at Drew.
So we have a variety of perspectives in the room, and we hope to learn and grow together, and we hope that in some way we can inspire you to also develop your teacher eyes. We start this week with discussions of reading, which are excerpted from Beers and Probst's books, Notice and Note, Reading Nonfiction and Disrupting Thinking. And these texts are helping us to think about how to engage students in inquiry and engagement with a text to be critical readers. So let's hear what we're thinking about. How's it going? What are you reading? What did you read this week? What are you thinking about in terms of how we're helping students to develop inquiring minds, we'll say?
So in the first reading, the intellectual communities reading, I thought that it was really interesting, and I don't know exactly where it said it, but they said an intellectual community are where students are encouraged to be risk takers and they're willing to fail. And I think that that's really important because, at least in my school experience, it was never encouraged to fail. Like, it was always like, you need to get an A, you need to get a B, you need to do all these things, you don't want an F. So I think, like, reading this, it kind of opened my eyes to the way that I want to teach one day and let my students know that it's okay if you fail, because I want you to take risks in your writing and any class, really. And I just thought that was really interesting.
So what does it look like to fail in your mind?
Good question. I think learning a lesson means that I somehow failed and that I somehow want to make a difference in whatever I did. So I think that's what it looks like to fail to me. I don't know exactly, like, if that would be like failing a paper and having to rewrite it, or like failing a pop quiz and taking another pop quiz 2 weeks later and getting an A. I don't know. I think just like learning a lesson and wanting to do better the next time is what failure looks like.
So interesting. Fail and failure have such negative connotations, mm-hmm. but they're really the key to learning. I mean, if you think about anything that you've struggled with as a student, that struggle is really what produces the most deep learning. Mm. It's not the thing that's easy to come by that really makes you a good student. It's the thing that's hard to come by. And I think I found that not just with intellectual things, but also athletically, sometimes the person who is the most gifted athlete is not necessarily the best coach, because something comes really naturally to them. Mm. It's often someone who's had to struggle through something that really knows how to teach something.
That's interesting. So how do we put ourselves as teachers in the role of struggler? Or are we already there? Are you already there, I should say?
I'm not teaching right now, but I am a student, and I was a student this summer, and I was asked to do a lot of things that I wasn't necessarily comfortable with or couldn't figure out how to find the time to do. And I think that's a healthy experience for anyone who's teaching, is to constantly be renewing that sense of being a student in some way or another.
Always a learner, right? Teachers always are always mm-hmm. learners. That's the heart of it. I think that's an important reflection to take away too. So I'm noticing that you highlighted and annotated. Did anything that we talked about last week work its way into the way you read these chapters. So last week we talked about the book, head, heart, mm-hmm. you know, what's in the text, what am I thinking about the text, how is it changing me or making me grow? Just curious.
When I was highlighting, I was like putting question marks and exclamation points, and I was like, what am I doing? It was just like coming naturally to me. And I was sitting there and I was like, oh my God, like I literally learned this like 3 days ago and I'm like already doing it. So I thought that was interesting that like a small thing was put in my head and then I executed it 3 days later while I was reading a book. And I thought that was really cool.
How about you, Emily? When...
I find that I retain information better when I write it down. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't as organized as using the symbols we learned last week, but if I don't write when I'm reading, then I don't remember as much.
And that's something that you've learned about yourself as a learner over years of schooling. So how do we help students then to engage with texts when they're still figuring out who they are as learners?
I think giving them options of how they could note take, either doing it like that or doing it the way that you told us, or literally just saying take a highlighter and highlight what you think is important. Because I think it's important not to teach them that there's only one way to do things right. I think giving them a horizon of different options is super important.
I agree, and I think even just discussing this podcast, the whole idea of taking a voice memo and voice notes after you read is something that could work for one student, whereas writing could work for another student.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's interesting. Also, it wasn't in this set of readings, but it was another set of readings we did that... they talked about having one sentence reflections for teachers, a sentence at the end of every month or at the beginning of every month. I don't remember, but that's it. I mean, you could do that writing or talking.
Our conversation shifted as we began thinking about the extreme temperatures that we were facing in the Northeast and how the heat had actually closed schools early and really impacted classrooms. So let's hear what everyone's thinking about all this heat and what the environment does to teaching and learning. How do students learn? I guess, how does the setting affect how they're going to learn in your classroom, and what might that mean for your classrooms?
You're bringing back a great memory from a high school history class, because my high school history class was always overheated, and my teacher was used to insist on opening the windows and bringing all the winter air into the class to keep us awake. But it's true. I mean, you do have to have a good environment for learning that's free of distraction, whether it be weather or any temperature or anything else.
Yeah, I agree. I think the environment plays such a vital role in the way that the students are going to be able to focus and learn, because I know I've had teachers who were just plain boring, and like my attention span goes away like that, I've noticed. And I think it's important that you're engaging, you're entertaining, but like you're also providing them with the best education that they deserve possible in that moment. But yesterday I was doing my observations and it was so hot. And, like, you could just tell that the kids were not having it.
Did you see anything, any particular ways a teacher might have made the best of a bad situation?
So there was, like, 10 minutes left before they had to leave. So she turned the lights off and she, like, let them put their heads on the desk. But she was still talking to them and they were still engaged. So I thought that was really interesting that she was able to keep them engaged even though their heads were down. And they snapped out of, like, their drowsy moods as soon as she put the lights off because it got cooler.
So one of the things I think we should look for when we go to Jill's classroom next week is environment, right? Mm-hmm. So how is the environment affecting or influencing the learning? And she obviously is going to be focused on teaching students to engage in inquiry as they read. So even though, and I do appreciate the idea that you want to give students options, I think Beers and Probst would say if you give them the option to highlight, they're going to highlight everything. Mm-hmm. So we have to teach them how to think about text before we know, or before they know, whether highlighting and writing in the margin is actually their best way of thinking, or whether it is actually using the book head heart and thinking about symbols and things like that, or whether it's a voice memo. So we need to teach them to inquire into the text, and that's what Jill's going to be working on. So let's think about that as we're engaged in the classroom next week. Our work this semester happens at the university, but it also happens out in schools, which I like to call teaching or learning on the ground. This week, we didn't get into a school, so we invited a teacher to come in and tell us what's happening in the real world of teaching. This is our segment, From the Field.
We are here with Michelle Taliento, who has just finished her first day or two in her brand new school, brand new teaching assignment. So, Michelle, how's it going out there?
It's going so great. I mean, it can only be going great when you're kind of living your actual dream. So coming to you live from my classroom, end of the day, very, very happy to be here.
How was it like teaching without a cooperating teacher?
Like equal parts terrifying, but amazing. So I was in a really lucky spot where I got to design my own curriculum with a team of other teachers who are also teaching the same course as me. But because I'm teaching the most sections, I was the kind of like the team leader of the course. So we had a lot of autonomy in deciding what to do. And that was something that obviously coming from a student teaching placement, it wasn't really something that you had a lot of choice over. So the choice has been excellent and wonderful and eye-opening to have it, but in some respects, very scary too. But having my own classroom, like actually my own place where I can keep my stuff, it's wild. It feels amazing. Like a place where I can create a community. That was what I always hoped to do as a teacher. And I feel like now I have like the actual space to do it. Feels great.
How did you go about creating that community on the first day?
Ooh, so I have what's called a social contract. They are still under construction in each of my classes. But one of the very first things that we did was create a list of things that we needed, like non-negotiable things that we all needed from each other. What they needed from me as a teacher and what I needed from them as the students and what they needed from each other. So it has things like, oh, respect one another, but it also has things like come prepared. Don't forget about the reading. Let's all stay on top of each other. And when we have these sorts of rules that we've all agreed to, we can kind of hold each other accountable. So I'm hoping that that is step one in creating my community of learners. Keeping my fingers crossed. So far, so good.
What does your classroom look like?
It has a mural, which is amazing. I have my very own classroom library, which was a labor of love. Donated books I found at Goodwill, my own personal books that students can check out whenever they'd like. So excited to have that. I have my desks grouped in pods. So they are like, they're not tables. They do have like their own individual desks. So we can move, adjust if needed. But I group them in pods because our class is so discussion-based that it's really the most effective way to make sure that everybody gets a chance to talk and be heard and to kind of facilitate that group work, because that's kind of the basis of what I do. So
Michelle, one of the things we're talking about in our class is about how to get kids to read texts critically and to use an inquiring mind when they read. So I'm wondering how you think you might be doing that this year with your ninth graders.
So right now, we are just getting started cracking on our summer reading. So the assignment that I gave them was incredibly open because I had so much choice. It was awesome. I could do whatever I wanted pretty much. I gave my CP students The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, and I gave my honor students The Secret Life of Bees. And the only real instructions that I gave them were to focus on character development and theme development and to mark up the text as much as they wanted. I asked them to think about what sort of messages they were noticing and how the message changed over time and what they noticed about the characters in the beginning of the text and how that changed over time, and to mark it in any way they felt. So I suggested on my sheet, post-its, highlights, underlines. I asked them to get like that text dirty. So I just saw they brought in their text for the first time. They have like post-it stacks this thick and tons of highlights. So right now we're going to talk about all the different ways that a reader can kind of mark up their text. And then we're going to use notice and note to analyze signposts and talk about how what they're noticing actually does signal something going on in the text.
So would it be all right if we checked in with you a little later in the semester about how that's going, since we're going to see some notice and note in the classroom next week?
Yeah, for sure.
And let us know how we can help with your podcasting. I know you're planning
yes.
to podcast with your students.
Yes. You want to say a little bit about that? Yeah, so my students are doing independent reading. So the very first 10 minutes of every day is going to be free choice reading. And while I'm still like wondering about like assessment and whether that's necessary, and I feel like I don't necessarily want to attach like a grade to it, I feel like that kind of defeats the purpose of creating the love for reading. I do want to offer them a chance to podcast and make book trailers so that they can recommend books to students either that are maybe thinking about that book down the line or as a way to just kind of check in with themselves about their reading. So I'm still not sure what form that's going to take, but I know I do want it to be about their independent reading and their journey with that throughout time. So
great.
Still figuring it all out.
That sounds wonderful. Try QR codes with
them. Yes, that's what I really wanted in my books. That's exactly what I wanted to do. Yes, you read my mind.
Michelle, thank you so much for checking in.
You're welcome.
Well, we've talked about a lot. We've heard a lot from Michelle. And now it's time for our final segment, Lingering Questions. So does anyone have any lingering questions from this week?
I think I'm interested in the notion of how do you teach students to persist through struggle.
You want to say a little bit more about that?
We were talking a little bit earlier about failure and how failure has a negative connotation, and that maybe struggle is a better word, or there may be other better words, but how deep learning often occurs through struggle and when you get to the other side of struggle. So how do you build students' stamina to persist through struggle?
And kind of going off that, my question is, how do we build these successful and positive learning environments despite it being really hot outside or outside classroom noise interfering with our students' learning?
So I think these are questions we'll continue to explore throughout the semester and throughout our conversations. That's it for this week. This is KT, Katrina, and Emily from the Developing Teacher Eyes podcast. You can find us at developingteachereyes.net. Thanks to Michelle Taliento, who you can follow on Twitter at Taliento Teaches, and I highly recommend you connect with her. Until next time.
Developing Teacher Eyes, out!